Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, Sunday night, February 21st, 2010. We had a great show. Well, unfortunately, Steve Barris didn't make it, but great show in Los Angeles, and we had a good time up there. Just finished the Coast to Coast show, as you know, with George Norrie. Actually, George was up at the show. Had some great times with him. Well, tonight's little exercise is about Billy Meyer case revisited. You're going to hear Lee Elders being interviewed on a group called Open Mind. And this is back, this goes back in the 70s and the 80s when Billy Meyer was under a bit of heat. And Wendell Stevens, the guy that put out all the books on Billy Meyer, had been arrested for some kind of a trumped up charge. So that'll be mentioned. And Lee Elder was in charge of security. And him and his wife, Britt, used to go over to the Billy Meyer's group over there in Switzerland. So it's going to start off with Lee Elders being interviewed. And I hope you enjoy this one. This is kind of a classic.
Happy to hear that, actually. Well, there's a couple of other things that I was curious about. I had heard something about a movie script and some rights to a movie script that possibly went over to Universal at one time based on the material. Are you aware of any of that?
Bill, could you repeat it? I can barely hear.
She was asking about that first movie that was made that went over to Universal for a while and then it's kind of floated around.
Oh, that's, yes, I'm very much aware of that. I'm very much aware of the writer. In fact, in 1978, I took this writer and three other people. I will not mention their names at this point. One of them today is number two man at a major television network in the documentary division. But I escorted the four of them into Switzerland. They met Meyer. And then I understand a script was done, but it was never sold. And I understand that every now and then we get a drift that somebody's looking at it, but nothing has ever been done on it, as far as I know.
Lee, the other thing I was wondering about is, I know that it seems as if, maybe it's not actually so, but it seems as if sometimes that we are suppressing a lot of this information and trying to keep it out of the public's eye. And I was wondering if Wendell's having been in jail might have anything to do with that suppression of information.
Well, that's a question I'd rather not get into, Marie, if you don't mind. I think that's something that Wendell should answer, not myself.
Okay, I understand. And the last thing I was curious about is, have you had contact yourself personally with Semyazi since the time you've been in Switzerland?
No, I haven't. My wife and I, we have seen light shows there late at night.
Uh-huh.
We have witnessed phenomena, which was unexplainable, but I've never seen, to the best of my knowledge, I've never seen a Palladian cosmonaut, nor have I seen a Palladian ship.
I understand. Well, Lee, thank you very much for taking the time to answer my questions.
Maureen, thank you for your interest.
Thank you.
You know, this case was the very first Open Mind show we ever did, was on Billy Meyer with
How
Wendell.
Exciting.
And it's odd that my introduction to Billy Meyer came about a year before when I was approached to do that screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't believe in flying saucers, but when I saw the material, I was more than happy to do the screenplay, but then it never did materialize.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you both very much.
Okay, Marie.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
And, Bruce.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yes, I was calling because I have a second book by Colonel Stevens. And I wondered if it was possible to write to the original addresses on the books to obtain more books, or due to his situation, is it impossible to get...
think the best thing to do is to write to those addresses. His daughter would be glad, I'm sure, to answer your letter and advise you as to what's available.
Okay. And I had one other question, and that was that in reading these books, and I wasn't sure if I quite followed your answer to the other girl, but there seems to be a lot of information that wants to be, that the Pleiadians want to... a lot of things they want to say, and I wondered if those things will be coming out in time.
Well, we hope so. As I mentioned earlier, we've had our priorities, and there's just, you know, there's only so much you can do in a 24-hour period. And obviously, it's very expensive to continue an investigation like this. In fact, we more or less terminated this case as far as investigation in 1982 at the beginning. But we hope that eventually, in the next 3 years, there'll be a lot more information appearing on this case. One, and hopefully, will be the contact notes. Another will be this mainstream book, which will cover the, more or less the inside story. It's being done by a very qualified and very talented investigative reporter. And it should be a very, very, very interesting reading.
I think one of the things to bring up is that your involvement and Wendell's involvement was primarily in the into the investigation of the case, the validity of it. And that took precedence in your mind.
Totally.
And then the wealth of material that is coming out from this, from Billy Meier, presents a problem for us over here in that it's in German, and it is costly to translate that into American. I know that when Edwin Slade was over there, that this is one of the things that they want to get done the most, is to have those contact notes translated into English so that we can have those over here. Because there are some very powerful things that are said in them.
Yes, and if I might add, once you read Wendell's report and the documentation and his approach to it, and the tests that were done, the entire book is stating a case, but now that the case is stated, I'd like to see what it's being stated about.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I do very much appreciate all that you're doing, and the other thing that I wanted to touch on, but apparently Lee doesn't want to go into it, was what Colonel Stevens is doing now, or what he'll be doing in the future.
Well, he's writing out his current problem, and he has a lot of plans for the future.
And he's in very good health. He's in very good spirits, and.
And writing like a banshee.
And we haven't heard the last of Wendell. Okay?
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for that. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind from Eleanor right now. Hello, Eleanor.
Hello. I'm very happy to have an opportunity to speak with you and to speak with Lee. Lee, I met you and Britt over at the Fronings a few years ago. I think you'll probably remember.
Oh, sure.
You were taking some pictures there.
We were just talking about David a few moments ago.
That is right. My interest was piqued in the first caller when he said he was wondering about what the message the Pleiadians had for us and what he was giving to Billy. Well, I have been corresponding with Billy Myers, and I have something in a letter. I will just read a portion of it to you, which I think might be very helpful. This was December 28, 1983. I asked in my letter what I could do to be helpful, to help this world out of its mess. And he says, "You ask what you can do, and the answer is very simple. All the protests and demonstrations will come to naught, because humanity cannot be changed as a mass. But the change for the better must start with each individual. And if you can change yourself away from a materialistic way of thinking toward a more spiritual way of life and affect the persons around you, then you will have done as much as can be expected of you, of anyone else. All the best wishes for the future. Sincerely." I thought that would shed some light on what is expected of us.
Right on target, too, isn't it?
It certainly is.
I mentioned earlier, I don't know if you heard this, Eleanor, but I in Beamship, the movie footage, Billy talks about balancing the material with spiritual.
Yes.
And that sort of sums it up, too.
It certainly does. Well, it's been a great privilege to talk with you again. And when you see Wendell, give him our very best from David and Eleanor.
I certainly will.
And much to both of you.
Thank you very much, Eleanor.
You're so welcome. Bye-bye.
And for sharing that with us. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Lee Elders, and we're talking about the beam ship, the footage, your chance to see it on this Saturday night. Lee, we've been promising them that we would play a little bit more of the audio tape that we played a little bit earlier. And I want you to hear the sounds of the Pleiadian spacecraft. Now, the sounds seem to be real, and what we're going to hear is in the control room of one of the sound laboratories here in town. Which one was it, Lee?
It was the Excalibur Studios.
Excalibur Studios.
North Hollywood, I believe.
So you'll hear the sounds, and you'll hear the comments of the sound engineers, who are fellows who know exactly what they're doing and what they're hearing, and also what they're seeing on their scopes, as this sound that was recorded by Billy Meyer on a Philips tape recorder, as I recall, on an occasion. And their excitement and a bit of perplexity about what they are hearing and seeing is quite evident. So let's listen to that for a moment.
Okay, a lot of changes that you've got on the spectrum analyzer. What is it telling you?
Okay, let's pick a point here on the screen. Let's pick that point there. You see how the level of that point is changing, it's going up and down.
Mm-hmm.
One point on the one line on the screen here is one frequency, and the whole screen is, you might say, a composite of a whole range of frequencies all the way from very low up to the top of the audio range.
Mm-hmm.
And a pure tone would simply show a peak, you know, one, you know, the line would be down the bottom here, and it would be straight peaked up like that,
mm-hmm.
if it was just one pure tone. But since there are many tones here, we get this pattern like this. And as you can see, it's not steady. It
keeps changing. Yeah.
Which means the contents keep changing also in our tape or the signal.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that seems to be any consistency, having consistency, is the amplitude modulation.
Yeah. If we look at an expanded view of the signal here, you
mm-hmm.
see that variation? Sort of like that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That goes on the signal all the way through.
It does?
Yeah. That's the only stable pattern, as far as I can tell.
Can you show the frequency of modulation, of amplitude modulation, by speeding up the sweep on this?
See the little peaks here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, compare this now to what we looked at before with the one peak. And you can see how many tones there are there. It's quite a few.
This is probably one of the most interesting things about the tape, is that there are...
What's this right now?
Very, very many tones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're all changing very fast.
For a moment there, we were looking in and we had three evenly spaced frequencies. See it there again?
Yeah, get them again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, when this engine has this many tones and frequencies in it...
Well, there certainly aren't any synthesizers that have oscillators that are that many and that random, tunes of that many random things all changing simultaneously. That's, you know, that's not something inherent in any of the synthesizers that are used for, you know, recording... or creating sound. This is something that has tremendous amount of oscillation at different frequencies.
Yeah.
So you're saying it would be very difficult to produce this electronically?
Yes.
Would it be possible, though?
It is possible, but
in this variety?
You have to consider your source. To create this on a Philips tape deck, if the Philips cassette came from the source that it supposedly came from, I don't see how the man could do it.
Okay, now you're running a comparison here of the sounds we're listening to and of the white noise down at the bottom, right?
Right.
What's the similarities between the two? And what are the really defined differences?
Okay, well, white noise is electronic unwanted signal in any electronic system, and you see that on the bottom here. Put patterns, and you can...
Mirage fighter that came in. And, of course, you've seen the photo.
Right, there we were. It's fascinating stuff, Lee.
You've heard the second part of that, the Variation 2 sounds, where the dog is barking.
Yes.
And the Mirage fighter.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So we get all of those other little sounds that the scope is telling everybody about. A Mirage fighter comes over, the dogs bark, and the spaceship is there. I mean, Billy must have a secret studio somewhere that defies conventional wisdom and science in order to produce those sounds on his little Philips tape recorder. We will play a little bit later the sounds of his first recording. That was a Variation 2?
Yes, uh-huh.
That was a Variation 6 craft. The Pleiadians are always changing models on us, quite like they've got a connection with General Motors.
You know, one of the things that's fascinating, too, is by the time we got in, you know, one of the problems with this case that I will always regret is the fact that we came in 2 years, almost 3 years too late after it had started. And there were only 4 photographs left of the Variation 1 type craft. And we managed to salvage, I think we have the 4, but we've never released them. One of these days we will.
Yeah,
and then you'll have all 6 craft, and you'll see a remarkable difference.
Yeah, the latest craft is a weird-looking thing with great big balls all along the outside of it.
Right.
But its capabilities are evidently enormous in that it can travel the distance from here to Pleiades, which is, 500 light-years or thereabouts, in a matter of a few minutes.
I think it's 7 minutes, seven and a half minutes.
And it used to take them an awful long time to make the trip, 7.5 hours.
Right.
So there's obviously no CHP up there with a speed limit. I'm talking to Lee Elders. I'll be right back, and we'll talk to you about the astronauts from Pleiades. Those things are expensive now if you find one. I'll be back with Lee Elders in just a second. Greg. Hi, Greg.
Hi. It's Craig.
Oh, Craig.
Right. Bill, we were in contact with you a couple years ago. My father is Leon. I don't know if you remember.
I believe...
We had some letters back and forth.
Yes.
And actually, I wanted to ask Lee, we had sent a tape in to Wendell a while back made from a crystal that we had found here in Northridge.
Uh-huh.
Made from the crystal?
Well, a tape, right. We were recording. We had found the crystal, and we started making a recording. I was recording just something in the house, and when we played back the recording, it had a bunch of frequencies and was making everything echo, and then we just recorded the crystal itself, and when someone would hold it, it would change pitch.
Crystals do that.
And Wendell, when he heard it, we played it for him over the phone, said that it matched a tape that he had heard from someone in Canada.
Yes,
so we had sent
him
a copy of the tape, and we sent him a bunch of
that tape, yes.
You have a copy of the Canadian tape or theirs?
I'm sorry, of the Canadian tape of the saucer.
Right.
Yeah.
Would you like to hear theirs?
No, did you ever receive our tape is what I wanted to
know. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't. You sent it to...
To Wendell.
To Wendell? Gosh, I don't know, but I'll certainly find out for you.
Okay. Also, you know, I guess we should contact Wendell again. My father is a very good telepathic receiver and receives things all the time. And in fact, we, alongside, we're doing quite a bit of our own research into the ancient history aspect of the Pleiades.
Yes.
And I have quite a bit of information that I'm going to send you that's up to date on some of the
stuff
we're
doing.
Oh,
we'd love to have it. We have just we haven't even scratched the surface in that area. I was talking to, I think, a Marine earlier, young lady, and I told her about our priorities, and that's one of them that we're really lacking in, and I wish we had more information.
Right. Well, I've got tons of it. I've spent the past 6.5 years all my spare time doing research into the ancient history aspect of it.
Well, then you're very familiar with the synchronicity of seven.
Definitely. And, you know, there's no culture or race or civilization in throughout ancient history in any part of the world that doesn't have some sort of connection in its mythology or legends that's dealing with the Pleiades.
Well, that's one of the things that really got our attention, because, first of all, how could this little, like Bill calls him, this little guy over there, hoax this entire thing? But also, how would he know about the connection there with all the civilizations?
Right.
With this star group. And, you know, normally where there's smoke, there's fire.
Right. You know, one of the amazing things is that both the Egyptian and the Mayan hieroglyphic for Pleiades are identical. And you're talking two civilizations that were not only thousands of miles apart, but thousands of years apart.
Well, the Great Pyramid is a standing tribute to Pleiades.
Right. And some of the Mayan ones are as well, and then there's a definite connection there.
And you've seen Volume 2, I would guess, on the Native American connection to the
Pleiades.
Right, Pleiades.
Right.
That we just found recently, and that literally was mind-boggling to us.
Oh, yes. I have some stuff I'll be sending you. I'd like to send
Please
you.
Please do. We'd love to have, especially in that area, because, as I say, we've been very lax in researching that area because we've had other things to do.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, Craig?
Okay, terrific. And I guess I'll just call Wendell then and get in touch with you that way.
All right.
Okay,
all right.
Thanks a lot, though.
Very good. And Florence, you're on.
Hello, Bill.
Hi.
Is Wendell Stevens going to be back on? I heard him a few weeks ago.
You heard him a few weeks ago?
Yeah, wasn't he on your show? Or do I have him confused with someone else?
I had Edwin Slade on about 6 weeks ago. I haven't had Wendell on in a couple of years.
Okay, is Edwin Slade the man from Las Vegas?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just had the names mixed up.
Yeah.
Well, talking about the size of the ships a little while ago, this man called in about a metal beam 350 feet long. Well, mother ships that stay in the upper atmosphere much larger than the ships that come down?
They defy imagination in size.
Yeah, like a football field.
Oh, no, much, much larger than that.
If I can quote Billy here now, if I can jump right in on this, you might find it interesting, both of you. The next tape we're doing, which will probably be April or May of next year, is called The Meyer Chronicles. It'll be 2 hours. But there's an interesting segment there where Yowie Junichi asked Billy what it's like on board the ship, and they're walking out to a site, and Billy says it's like a watching central. Now, this is one of the major problems we had with Meyer for about a year and a half, and that was breaking down his code, and there was a code there, which was partially the Swiss-German and the English that he had difficulties with. But watching central, what he meant was it's like a central, well, you've seen these central guard turrets,
yeah,
or an area where it's equipped with television sets, where your security forces monitor all the cameras and everything in various areas. So
right.
He was trying to say that. But anyway, that's the way he described it, like a watching central inside.
Also, it was very interesting when Ed Slade was over there, as he was going over some of Billy's contact notes, that one of the people on board the mothership is Yuri Gagarin.
I heard that. I don't have any information on it, though.
It was written in German, and Ed understands German, reads German.
Mm-hmm.
And there it was in one of the things. It was going over a number of the people throughout history, and certainly in recent history, that have been contacted by the Pleiadians.
You know, Bill,
over 3,000 of them.
Yes, I heard part of that show, but I missed part of it because I'm, you know, the locale I'm in. But one of the things I found interesting is Edwin talking about the prophecy of Meyer.
Yes.
And I wish we could have gotten into that because
Bill?
There.
Our time just ran out. Hear the band, Florence.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to write you a letter.
Please do.
Okay.
Please write me in. I wish we could have talked longer and gotten on to this, but we're going to have to go and make room for Tom Hall and Gary Franklin. I'll be back next week. We'll have kind of a fascinating show for you then. I want you to join us.
Well, that was a pretty interesting show. Now we'll put a little National Health Federation stuff on. That was from the old days, from the Pleiadian days, when things were going on. So anyhow, hope you enjoyed that little ditty there. Now we're going to jump into the National Health Federation and give a nice lecture here in about a minute. There we go. Just waiting for Dr. Bell to show up here.
Federation, I'm Dr. Heinerman. I'm the MC in this room. And we have another gentleman who will be occupying the next 55 minutes approximately. We are going over. There is a break, so Dr. Bell will be able to extend his time and not feel, you know, a necessity to vacate the room unless we hear air sirens or something like that. You know, incoming pelicans or whatever. I first met and learned about Dr. Bell many years ago at the National Health Federation and other organizations when I was on the lecture circuit during the time that he was, and I remember his work very distinctly with the pyramids, and he commanded quite a bit of attention at that time. It was an area that, like all areas in the holistic health field, was very controversial. Fred was viewed as something of, an eclectic sort of person. Some people scratched their heads and were wondering about this fellow with the pyramids, but then and again they were doing that with me in regard to herbs. And so both of us, I guess, have been considered kind of nuts in our day, and yet we weathered the storm and we are now finding that the things we believe in and advocate, you see, are pretty much kosher, as they would say. So I asked Dr. Bell how he'd like to be introduced, and he said, well, besides what's written in the literature here, as an inventor of many health devices that raise the levels of consciousness of all of us. So, without further ado, let's give a warm California welcome to a man who will raise your level of interest this morning, Dr. Fred Bell.
Thank you.
Is everybody ready for the 90s now? Everybody have their gas masks with them. That's amazing that we can still have a Hitler afterlife going on in the Far East, and how one man can still affect the lives of a lot of people. Isn't that amazing? This shows you what a difference one person makes. You know.
Okay.
Can't hear me?
Okay.
Yeah, I was just. Okay, so really, then there's no in-house microphone at all. Like this? Oh, okay, I see. Kind of a funny mic. So this is the kind of microphone for this. It's a lavalier. Anyway, it's just what I was saying is it's amazing that one person can make a difference, like in the Far East. But you got to realize too that one person in this audience can make a difference here. And this is just an example of where more people pay attention to what the difference is, and it happens a little bit faster. I'm going to talk about a bunch of things. This crisis in the Middle East isn't something that just came about. I'm sure most of you are aware of that. It's part of a great big plan that was going on, and the man, you know, Hussein was egged on to go into battle. I mean, they went into Kuwait. If you remember, Kuwait was originally an Iraqi property anyway, and the League of Nations divided it up and took it away from them. Now they're trying to get their property back. They're doing it in the wrong way. At the same time, you know, Hussein was accusing America of being one of the greatest drug-dealing nations of the world, which it has been. It's really sad what's going on, and it's all part of a giant cover-up, which I'm sure most of you are aware of. If you go back and trace its origins, if you look back at the end of World War II, what was happening, Russia had the atomic bomb. We had dropped it on two cities in Japan, and there was a tremendous fear of unrest that was going on. the government was testing some high-powered radar sets, microwave, you know, the giant, huge microwaves, back down in the Los Alamos labs in New Mexico. And during that time, four alien spaceships were hit by the radar, and they had plutonium reactors on board, and they crashed. When these ships crashed, they immediately put together a couple of agencies within the government. That was the beginning of the formation of the National Security Council, which had Henry Kissinger at its top, and he still runs it. And the government got very involved with a lot of underground activities. These ships that were recovered were transported to Los Alamos Labs and later on down to Holloman Air Force Base. And they found 18 occupants aboard, and this began a new wave of secrecy and technology. A new group was formed, which was then called MJ-12, and the level of clearance was a Q clearance, a secrecy, which the President of the United States, who at that time was Truman, was allowed to, grant a clearance to, but yet the level of clearance was not even, the President himself couldn't go on the facilities. And this area then evolved up into where it is now, Area 51, up in Las Vegas, north of Las Vegas, Nevada, and top secret research of all forms began to take place. One of the SR-71, how many of you remember the SR-71 when it was flying, a high-powered aircraft? Well, they retired about a year ago now, and the reason they retired it is because when it was flying over Russia, Russia was working on some what's called beam weapons, which were developed during Nikola Tesla's time. It was some of Tesla's design. And they shot a 2-foot wings section off of one of the jets. Now, the jet didn't crash, but it did make it back, but they immediately retired it, and they came up with a new type of jet, which is called the Aurora. Now, the Aurora is kind of interesting in the fact that it takes 7 miles of runway out there at Area 51 to take off. It's capable of flying to the moon and back and landing at the same place that it took off. In the 60s, with the Aurora in flight, which was well in place long before the SR-71, we were already putting lunar lander bases up. So the entire Apollo program in NASA, which I worked on, was just a big joke. Parallel to this, in 1986, up at the Jicarilla Indian Reservation, what's called a Delta craft bomber crashed. And a Delta is a plutonium-powered spaceship that the government built with joint alien technology. And when it crashed, the first thing they did is put nets over it. The Marines were called in, they put nets over it, and this crashed on the Jicarilla Indians near the Navajo River reservation. When it crashed, it spilled a reactor. Two pilots were killed, the reactor was spilled, and plutonium went into the Navajo River. Now, I'm very friendly with the Apaches. I've done a lot. We've done some TV specials together up there. That's where Geronimo actually came from. And the first thing that happened was when this plutonium spilled, it went right into the river and went down and ruined 7 of their beautiful lakes. The Indians in that area made money up until this time, until 86, of having tourists come in and do fishing in the lakes. The lakes were destroyed. Today they're destroyed. You can go up and ask any Indian in the Dulce, New Mexico area where this crash took place, and they'll tell you the same thing. Ever since 86, no fish are in their lakes anymore. Russia had a satellite parked over this area, which I've seen satellite recon photos. It's public access information. Because the satellite was parked there, that's why they put a tremendous amount of effort to cover up this mess that happened. A researcher by the name of Paul Benowitz, who owns a company called Thunder Corporation in Albuquerque, New Mexico, went in there with a small private plane. He had a small twin-engine plane and began to map and photograph day by day what the changes were. And he ended up sending a letter to a senator with all the photographs attached, showing four different saucer disc type craft on the floor around this crashed plutonium-powered object. And the Air Force came down and took him in for an interrogation and a debriefing. So these are the kinds of things that go on. In the early 50s, when MJ-12 was formed, the Secretary of State was at that guy by the name of, at that time, a person by the name of Forrestal. Forrestal was a deeply religious man, and he had already seen these alien captives that had been taken place, these aliens. And what he really wanted to do was bring it out to the American public, the fact that this was happening. But instead he was silenced by the CIA. They put him in a mental institution, said he was mentally incompetent. But they tied a sheet around him and threw him out the window, and the sheet broke, and he fell to the ground several stories below. They tried to write it off as a suicide. About this time, Nelson Rockefeller got involved with the MJ-12 group and the Office of Foreign Affairs. And they went on and he helped bring Eisenhower into office. Eisenhower was really the last president that really knew what was going on with this great alien cover-up and this technology. Then there was more concern in the 50s when some more alien ships crashed and they found a lot of human body parts in them, many body parts. And they realized then that the aliens were dissecting human beings for research purposes as well as food. Now you've got to realize that we had in our deal that we made with the aliens, which was actually consummated at Murdoch Field in 1954, the secret government made the deal such that the aliens would be allowed to abduct human beings, but they should submit to the government first lists of these human beings that they were abducting, and then later on they were supposed to, when they abducted someone, return them with no memory of the abduction. Because of the technology and the way it works, this is possible, which I'll explain. I'm just giving you an overview of what I've been doing lately. Well, the government also allowed them to mutilate animals. How many of you remember all the animal mutilations? Currently the circles that are being put down in England. All kinds of circles. So after the stage went through, the government realized that this wasn't happening anymore. They were going against the grain. There was a big fight between the government and the aliens in the Dulce base in 1969. 66 Americans were killed, and 25 papers were smuggled out in 1969, which began to be known as the Dulce Papers, and this is how it began to leak out as general information, what I'm talking about now. This was the actual proof. Since then, of course, through the Freedom of Information Act, there have been literally hundreds of papers that have been subpoenaed and brought forth. One of the big things that was of interest is where did the money come from to pay for all of these projects and these huge underground bases? The funding started back in the late 40s with the paranoia of the hydrogen bomb explosion possibly going on with what was called Alternative 1, Alternative 2, and Alternative 3. These were different plans that were made to protect our diplomats, and our diplomats would go into underground facilities in case of the danger of an atomic warfare threat. So this is how they did it. The money was secretly allocated. And I'm sure some of you have heard of what they call black bot projects or black projects funding. It comes up in the news once in a while. A lot of this money was obtained later on for drug funding. And in the 70s, early 70s, and late 60s, when George Bush was president of Zapata Oil Company, a technique was developed to bring in contraband, leave it on offshore rigs, and then bring it by other means into the United States. This was also public access information. This money was then used to finance Contra activities, and the profits from this, because the Contras, you got to realize, were the protectors of the drug lords at this time. And so when the Oliver North trials came up later on, and I'm sure the Poindexter and all these people that were being subpoenaed, you'll notice that the federal government did not prosecute them with a federal prosecutor. They hired a private attorney. Private attorney couldn't get access to these funds because a lot of people thought finally this alien question was going to surface, but of course it didn't. Meanwhile, the Council of Foreign Affairs was getting on a greater political power. They had the alien technology to deal with, and they came out and they began to put together what was known as the Global 2000 Report. How many of you remember me talking about the Global 2000 Report over the years? Well, I only spoke about one end of it, about the danger of the destruction of the ozone layer, the danger of the destruction of the environment, the rainforests. For example, it takes 55 square feet to produce a quarter of a pound of a hamburger of rainforest. I mean, I went into all these statistics. What I didn't tell you was that, as I found out later in the federal government, there was a thing called the Haig-Kissinger extermination policy, because they realized that if the world was going to be populated too heavily by the year 2000, that they were going to have to start to remove the human race. At the same time, they decided to set up a world government, and you notice that Bush is now referring to the world government. He's referring to it openly. The world government's idea was to encapsulate a world bank. The only way they could get a world bank was to destroy all the banking systems that are going on. And if you notice, the feds now have the number three bank they took over on the East Coast. They had to unite and remove any opposition, and this is what the Eastern Bloc was screaming about. This is what the Ayatollah was screaming about. Even though he was a black force, he did see, you know, he was calling the pot black, the kettle black. He did see the what was going on over here, and so did Hussein. They saw politically what was going on over here, and they protested as best they could. But unfortunately, we're too great a superpower, and their protests were done in the wrong way because they were taking hostages and things like that, so that nobody they lost their credibility. But they planned to take over Iraq a long time ago and destroy them. And so as a result, how many of you noticed the credit cards are being freely issued now where you used to have to qualify? They just send them to you now because they want to get everybody under control now and issue just one world account so they can control all the money on this planet. So the plan is well underway. Getting back into the Hague Kissinger depopulation policy, a group by the name of ADHOC was put in place, spelled A-D-H-O-C-K, and ADHOC was in charge of some of the extermination measures. One of the first things they began to do was experiment with a thing called Agent Orange and different forms of nerve gas and mix it with malathion and spray it on the populace. How many of you remember when we were doing the malathion spraying this time last year? Okay, if you'd have gone out and looked at one of those helicopters, which was always put under a shroud of secrecy at night when they flew, they just didn't land at your local airport, they were covered in hangars, you would have found that they were owned by a company that was called Evergreen. And Evergreen was controlled by ADHOC. This was just the beginning of it. Since then, they went ahead and they got involved more and more with what I call DNA warfare. Using the auspices of the destruction of the ozone layer, studies were run back in the 70s, and they began to see, with a little bit of help from laboratories and a little bit of viral infections added to the populace, they could modify and genetically change things like herpes 1 into herpes 2 and herpes 3. Candidus came along because of the body's inefficiency to deal with the high ultraviolet that was coming through. And later on, AIDS-type viruses were introduced. That's why the great controversy into the societies right now. Just so you have some information, I'm just going to tell you something right now. I have a completely documented tape series that I'm working on right now that will be available probably in a couple months. You can order it, from our booth in the back there, which is way in the back, which has a pyramid over it. I don't know. It's the Paradigm booth. It's in the far back corner by the back door. And in this tape series, I've got about 1 hour of the best video footage that you'll ever see of alien spacecraft. It's not something. Some of it's from the news. Some of it's from Belgium. Some of it is direct from Area 51, showing vehicles taking off and going into outer space. And if you want to see for yourself some of this alien technology, joint alien American technology, you can go two places for the experience. One is you can go up to Tonopah, Nevada. Now, we've got some footage in our videotape that was taken off the top of the Hilton Hotel in Las Vegas with a telephoto lens. When you see these craft fly, you'll be totally blown away by what they do. There's a little diner that you can go to further up. You just go up to Area 51 at Groom Lake. You won't get too far in before the government will come out of nowhere and turn you around, but you go in as far as you can before they stop you. And just tell them that you're looking at Area 51. They won't arrest you at first. They'll just try to run you off. But it appears to be public roads. There's no fences or anything until you're well inside their zone. And then they come out of nowhere. It was real interesting in 1986, that area. They took over, the Air Force came in and took over several thousands of acres of land in there and took it away from the ranchers. And the reason that they did this was because they didn't want you to get up on hills that overlooked their test site so that you could see these alien vehicles coming and going into space, which they do. But the local populace fought about it. People down in Las Vegas fought it too, but they didn't, against the Air Force, they didn't have much of a chance. The funding agency that's behind this, however, is the Navy. How many of you in here know John Anderson over at Integrated Health? He has the Optimum Plus booth back there. You can drop by his booth, and he can tell you of another experience that he had. He was up at Dulce, New Mexico, which is where there's a joint underground base also. It's up near the Four Corners area, and John was up there. As I'd sent him in. He was coming down from a health show in Colorado that we did in Denver, and he was able to see the alien ships coming, going at very close range. he ended up not only getting chased out of there by the government off Indian reservations, but they actually followed him down to his house in Tempe, Arizona, and surveyed his house for 2 months. Now, this is a board, this is one of the board members of the National Health Federation we're talking about. Matter of fact, Maureen is now ready to go up there and have her experience. She was talking about it last time I saw her, about going up, and her son, Sean Morton, is very involved with us now in the filming and the compiling of these different tapes. So I'm just giving you a rough case scenario of what's going on out there in the real world, if you're interested, because the technologies that I've been involved with have been from the good side, along with the bad guys. The bad extraterrestrials that we're talking about now, a group called the Greys, have been a good group called the Pleiadians. The Pleiadians have been around this planet for a long time. They also came to our government in the 50s to no avail. The government had already made a deal with the Greys for negative alien technology. Primarily, the government got propulsion systems, which they're now using, and were supposed to get weapons technology, but they did not get weapons technology. Now, this war that we're fighting right now in Iraq is an obsolete weapons technology war, but if you notice, the pilots are real anxious to get to battle over there because they want to try out their new computer toys. If you look at one of these cruise missiles, for example, you know, you can launch that thing back in Phoenix, Arizona, and hit your neighbor's house with it. That's how accurate it is, and not even bother your own house. They're incredibly accurate. The technology and weaponry today is far more substantial than what they're using right now. This was built on a financial base of around $3 trillion. That's what was spent on the technology that's used now. When the Greys cut off the technology and started abducting more and more human beings, the government got really upset, and they developed a couple of weapons. One of the weapons was another type of missile called Excalibur, which is designed to go up 30,000 feet and then turn around and come straight back down and penetrate with a nuclear warhead an area about 500 feet underground. So this means that the rocket would go down under the ground 500 feet and then cause an explosion. This is a current weapon that we have in our arsenal called the Excalibur. So I'm sure a lot of you are not really what I would call attuned into what's really going on. I have a strong military background. I have a strong governmental background. I worked with the government for over 15 years, and I had some of the highest clearances attainable back before I came here, which is a long time ago. And I even remember what we had then, and I was very curious about what was going on. So I learned about a lot of projects that a lot of people didn't get involved with, because my earlier projects had started when I was about 14 years old at the University of Michigan, when I worked on a project called the Philadelphia Experiment, which later on led to the technology of stealth bombers. So I had a pretty good view of what was going on. It wasn't until the late 60s, early 70s that I started getting into the health side of it, because when I got a few exposures to radiation, and I noticed some effects on my body. One of the early things that I worked on in radiation exposure was the results of human beings that had been overexposed in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And we found that some of the individuals that had been exposed to the what I call near ground zero bomb blasts in Nagasaki and Hiroshima had no long-term genetic defects of radiation, whereas others that were 20 or 30 miles away had long-term effects of radiation. So we began to do studies on that, because radiation is one of the concerns. And we found that the people that were close to the radiation and survived it without any dangers, the reason their systems were so strong is they had built up their immune systems with different herbs that they were taking. And the three of the best herbs that were good for this were also mental stimulant herbs, were Fotai, Gotu Kola, and Ginseng. So in later times, when I started formulating, we developed two formulas. We developed one formula, which is called XL Plus, that we started to manufacture, that used Fotai and Gotu Kola. But the FDA came along and they said that you can't put ginseng in there because it's a tonic. This is about 7 or 8 years ago. So I got with John Anderson, Integrated Health, and we took his Optimum Plus formula and we added what's called an ester C to it and a ginseng formula to it. And we married the two products and we got up what I would call a series of tonics that really builds up your immune system. Now, when you're breathing air on this planet, which is so bad, your immune system is subject to a lot of negative energies. And when you are out in the sunlight a lot, the ultraviolet rays are harmful to some people. Now, some people are not harmed by them because they have different kinds of enzymes in their body, in their skin, and they can process infrared. It depends on kind of where you're at in a vibratory rate. But if you're one of these people that's harmed by this, you'll find that these different tonics that we make will really help you out with the... And the first thing, by the way, that the first symptom of ultraviolet poisoning is...
We need to go to the other side here to finish this up. This is how we did it in those days. We ran out of space, we continue on. Now let's see what we have here now. Should be a few more minutes unless they cut me off on that tape, which then will end the show. Just waiting. Anyway, it's been a good show. We had a little... the elders, Lendell Stevens, Billy Meyer, Sannyasi talk earlier. And I guess that was the end of that one. So that's how they did it. They just cut us off. So that's all right. It's been 51 minutes anyway. So you've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show.
Jesus, you'll find...
Well, I guess we're going to go.
That, you know, age is like the biggest minutes, thing yeah. that we work our way into. The immune system, however... will show up as skin blemishes and problems with the skin at first. So if you're having some kinds of problems with your skin or your complexion, you can bet that your immune system is fighting because the skin is the largest indicator of what goes on in the immune system. The ELF problem was another thing. Back in World War II, they had to have submarine communication. And submarine communication, it became very necessary to talk back and forth to submarines, and they decided that they found that real low-frequency waveforms would allow submarine commanders to talk back and forth and command bases. They also found that around the transmitting areas, people got sick. And in 1978, the Russians were caught sending ELF transmissions into the American embassy, and it was documented in Moscow. We at that time didn't know what it was all about, but by the early 80s, we knew what ELF was all about. As a matter of fact, now it has commercial applications in bars and restaurants where they use it on the wrong frequencies. And it causes people to drink more alcohol, and the alcohol consumption goes up. To combat the ELF problem, in the homes we developed a thing which you've probably seen was called a star orb. We found that ELF frequencies in a square room, the worst room that you could have would be a rectangle or a square, and construction-wise, because this planet is based on greed, and so it's easier to build a square than it would be a round room or a pyramid-shaped room or a broken room, so the cheapest thing the contractor would build would be a square or a rectangle. So we found that by putting this thing called a star orb, which is a pyramidal-type shape up in a corner of a room, what would happen is it would, when the ELF finally got into that part of the room, it would capture that energy and convert it back to an energy that was harmonious to the human body. We started getting heavy into cell frequencies. I did a lot of studies of the work of Dotto, who was a friend of Betty Lee Morales, Gianni Dotto, and Betty Lee and I had done a lot of research together back in the 70s, on the effects of cells transmissions in toxic environments. The first area that we really got into to help people out was the pyramids that we make and we were manufacturing. How many remember when everybody was wearing a pyramid? Those pyramids are still around. People are still wearing them. Because we have the receptor developed now, there's less and less pyramids worn in public, but people wearing those pyramids over long periods of time found that they got a gradual detoxification of their brains and a gradual strengthening of their mental faculties. Because what happens is when you breathe in air, your body has a large arterial system of arteries going into your lungs for the air to transmit through and the blood to mix. Once the blood-air mixture is put together in the lungs, it goes out through the heart, up through the aorta valve, up through the carotid artery into the base of the brain. The air blood mixture is going through major pipelines to get to your brain, but as soon as it gets to your brain, it's distributed all throughout the brain. this distribution network of arteries in the brain are only millions of an inch in diameter. So the brain has is acting like a strainer. You've got this huge artery coming in, and millions of tiny little strainers, or little tiny arteries. So breathing in this heavy environment, environmental gases and things that we breathe today, the body over a period of years starts to build up a tremendous residue at the base of the brain that moves forward. When it starts to move from the base of the brain forward, it starts to upset your physical balance, because the cerebellum, which is the first area entered by the blood-oxygen combination, is also the balance, the physical balance. And you'll find that you can't play hopscotch anymore, and you can't balance on one foot and jump around the room, and the kinds of things that you could do when you were a kid. And we take it for granted, but it doesn't have to be taken for granted. When it moves into the midbrain, what happens is we have digestive problems. We have assimilation problems. And the body begins to think that we've got to get big, we've got to have a weight problem, we've got to have all these problems, but this isn't true. Because you can change these energies. And what happens is, in order to change the energies back to what you were when you were younger, you have to get rid of all these pollutants that are building up in your brain. And when it finally gets to the forebrain, it affects your psychic abilities. A lot of people can't be psychic. Their clairvoyance goes away. Their intuitions drop, and they become senile, which is kind of another form of ignorance. So the pyramids that we developed back in the early 70s, worn over a period of years, have a tendency to act like a vibrating source that removes all these toxic materials from the brain and restores the brain to its natural...
Stop this, because we're running over time, and we've been having a problem with that, so we'll continue this next week. Until then, have a great week. Bye.